So without any further ado, I want to introduce to you someone who's been part of Kista Cafe Radio for several years. We've hosted a house concert with him once before here in the Kansas City area, and we had a lot of fun then. If you don't know the name John Bettendorf, you know the voice and you know his songs because he's had his music played in commercials. He wrote the music for, was it Touched by an Angel?
And Promised Land.
And Promised Land as well. So you know his songs from that. And he had a big hit record back in the 70s. I actually heard Casey Kasem say something about him, do a little bio on him back in, I listened to those old radio shows. So it was kind of cool. I go, I know that guy.
Were you born then?
I was born then, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm not telling. No, I wasn't born then. I was born like early 90s.
Your mom told you that, right?
Right. So anyway, without any further ado, I want to introduce to everybody the great John Bettendorf.
What a cool spot this is. This is really nice. Well, I am on tour from California. I've lived in California since 1967. And I'm only 35, so figure that out. Last September, my wife and I celebrated our 42nd anniversary. It's pretty hard when you're only 35 then. Some really strong years there that add up to two, I guess. But anyway, so this first song is a song that I wrote back in 2005, I think it was. And it's about finding your perfect match. It's called Me and You.
Two nights, one dream. Two days with one awakening. Two minds learn something new. Where there's just one. Someone complete to think one thought is true, where there's just one, me and you. Never thought that life was adding up too much, traveling the solitary path. Well, I was so divided till I felt your touch, and then I learned. Where they belong, to see one awesome view, where there's just one, me and you. Some things are forever, some are to ride and dream. Some things just define how it should be. Some things never change, like one and one or two. There's just one, you and me. Two flowers, one vase, two lives lived as one because two souls know one thing's true, where there's just one. We have found. just one. Me and you, me and you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I got into Dallas last Friday, expecting balmy Texas weather. Anything but. I thought I was in the wrong plane. I thought I was in Alaska. And it was an interesting trip in Texas. And I'm glad I survived, actually. It was a couple times I had my doubts. I've been to Lubbock, Texas. It's really out there in the middle of nowhere. And it went from 60 degrees to 16 overnight. That's a pretty big dip. So, in California, the only way to actually drive on ice is to put ice cubes under your tires and kind of get a little ride there. It's scary when the whole road is frozen.
Wow.
Anyway, it's nice to see the sun. And it's nice to be able to be without a coat, you know. It's spring almost. In California, we occasionally have to wear a long-sleeve shirt.
What is it, 70?
Actually, my wife said today was 90.
Yes. I know.
When it's 65, it's this time for a muffler.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been writing songs my whole life. All 62 years. I started very young. Actually, I started writing, actually, it was around maybe 8 or 9. Songs started just coming to me, and... It's actually like almost like a form of mental illness, but you're a musician, so you get away with it because you're allowed to hear voices if they become songs. So it's okay. So I write from a lot of things. You know, are the influences for writing songs. And since I've been married for so many years, I don't write a lot of songs about bad relationships because I'm lucky enough not to have one. But I have several friends that have shared their experiences with me, so I get to use their experiences for songs. So this is a song about a guy who's in a relationship, and he's at the point where he's willing to take anything except goodbye. It's called Don't Tell Me Goodbye.
Tell me I'm to blame and how I need a change, but don't tell me goodbye. Tell me how I failed and tell me what to do and tell me it's a crime and all the fault is mine, but don't tell me we're through. You can tell me what we built was broken carelessly, and it all was me. You can beat me with the words I've spoken, and I'll take it willingly. Tell me how you hurt, and all the reasons why. Just tell me in advance, I don't deserve a chance. Don't tell me goodbye. Tell me not to speak, that nothing I could say could make up or explain or ever heal the pain. But don't say there's no way. Tell me just how long I will have to try to show you I'm sincere. Tell me that it cheers, but don't tell me goodbye. You can tell me there's a million reasons you believe that it's time to leave. Tell me it could be a million seasons, and I'll hold on patiently. Tell me what you need. Just tell me and I'll try. Tell me you're unsure, my promise will endure, but don't tell me goodbye. Never loved anybody like you in my whole life. I can see I've got so much to do to make it all right. Tell me I was cruel, how I made you cry. See you 90 years till I dry those tears, but don't tell me goodbye. Say you wait and see if there's a you and me, but don't tell me goodbye. Tell me you're not sure you love me anymore, but don't tell me.
You know, my dad was a musician. My uncle was a musician. I used to sing with my dad. Actually, we lived in Albuquerque when I was like 6 years old. And I took my first guitar lesson back then. I took a lap steel or lap guitar, Hawaiian kind of guitar. And my dad used to play at nightclubs on the weekends. And I used to go sing with him in the nightclubs when I was 6 and 7. I was little Johnny. We would do Elvis songs. Those great shoes and all that. I'd probably be arrested for taking me in the bar now, but it was a different time. It was Albuquerque. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I remember singing with those kids. So, you know, he wanted to be, my uncle was a, actually had four top 10 singles, country singles. And I think they always wanted me to follow in their footsteps as country guys. I just wasn't really that into that country thing. But my dad did teach me a lot about music. And one of the things he taught me was that he said that, listen, you know, if you're going to do this for a living, you have to figure out, when you're done playing, are they clapping because you're good or because you're done? I've done both, I think. So that's what I'm trying to figure out right now. good, he's done. Anyway, this particular song was written back in 2008. And you never know where a song's going to come from. This came from, I've made records and did commercials, and then I got this great opportunity to do a TV show. And it was a spinoff of Touch My Angel called Promised Land with Joe McCraney. And it was a really, really good show. It lasted 3 years, but I was the music composer on that show. And the hardest work I ever did in my life, and the tightest deadlines, you would do 22 minutes of orchestrated music fully done in 3 days. I mean, it was totally insane. So I kind of learned a new work ethic, because it was not like the regular musician's life. It was, it's kind of like ruining the reputation of musicians getting up at 5 and working until 9. But then I went on and kept working on Touch My Angel when Promised Land was over with. And my wife and I have always loved fishing. And on our 33rd anniversary, so we have to buy a boat. We finally had enough money to buy a really nice bass boat. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, there's never a right time to have kids or buy a bass boat. But we went ahead and did it anyway. So it was really great. And we're not the kind of people that bought a boat and want to sell it right away. We love fishing. I mean, if I could do that and make money on it, that's what I would do. My ultimate goal is to have my own fishing show where I could write the songs about fishing. I don't know if that's going to happen. So we went fishing up in the Sierra Nevadas, which is on the east side of the mountains in California, which we always go to. And it was kind of the first time gas started getting really expensive in California. It got really expensive. And I forgot to get gas in one of the bigger towns of 800 and ended up getting gas where there were about 30 people living, and there were two gas stations, two bars, two hotels, and I know as soon as we pulled in that there were no prices posted, that it was not going to be like a bargain. So it was the first time I ever paid $5 for gas, and that kind of ticked me off. And it seems like a lot of money for gas. It was the same stuff I used when I paid a quarter for it. I don't think it's changed that much, has it? Yes, it is. So anyway, I kind of used it as inspiration for this song. There's a lot of stuff in life that kind of tick us off and we have no control over, but sometimes it's cool just to kind of vent about it and it makes you feel better. So that's where this song came from.
Just to buy gas to get to one. Takes three cars just to guarantee that one will run. I bought the lousy cars and yet I'm paying off the corporate debt. And it ain't my debt.
Dreaming, and it's the first time I ever made music videos. And it's an interesting thing, you know, I know it's kind of shocking, but I don't get called to do a lot of music videos. They're on MTV and stuff. I just don't haven't made that list. Not sure why, but I'm hoping. But since I was the star of these particular songs, I was determined to be in my own videos, whether it hurt the sales or not. So we hired a guy. My friend Michael McLean and I, I write songs with. And I said, you know, okay, yeah, I've never been in a music video. What do I do? And he says, well, you have to know your songs. Is how you're going to do that. You got to know your songs. You got to play. And all we do is we'll blast the music. And whatever location we are, and all you do is sing and play. You know, don't lip sync because it looks really stupid if you do that. People lip sync, they really overdo it with their mouth. I don't know why that is, you know, because people go talk like this. And when they lip sync, they do it. It's very, very goofy. I don't know. But so I said, well, I think I can do this okay. So he said, bring a bunch of clothes, a bunch of different guitars. So and it was out in Malibu, and it was a beautiful day in May. And so I got ready to do the first video, and so we went down this dirt road about 200 yards. He said, all I want you to do, I'm going to have the SUV, we're going to drive in front of you real slow, and have the back open, blasting the tune, and I'll be shooting you as you walk down the street. It seemed pretty easy to me. I did write the songs, I know the chords and everything. But what I did notice is that, you know, if you notice here, I don't walk a lot when I sing. It's a different dynamic than I'd ever done before. And it actually takes air and energy. And you don't want to walk out of rhythm, you know, like this ultimate white guy looking like Gomer Pyle on your videos. So I did the best I could. But no matter how fast I was able to walk and still trying to look cool, the car was always going a little bit faster, so I'd have to try to keep up. And it was a very humbling day. We shot for 8 hours, and we got 4 videos done. And through the magic of really great editing, they came out really cool. And this very last one was the last one we did. And my friend Michael lived in Malibu Canyon. And it was right when the sun was hitting the top of the mountains behind us on this deck, and it was so gorgeous. And perfect time to do this song. It's a song about someone who is in a commitment, in a marriage. And there are times when you question that commitment, but you do your best to honor it. And so that's what this song is about. It's called Will I Love You Forever?
That awkward moment is now. Will I love?
promise I made and will not be betrayed. Though I'll love you forever, it's so hard to date. How long does it take when someone's heart breaks to mend? What sign will I see so my love can be like it was again? To keep trying long after the end credits roll. Will I love you forever? It's a promise I made and will not be betrayed. Though I love you forever, it's so hard to take. Yes, I love.
Yes, I got a tune up, so that will do it for sure. Oh, great, oh, cool. I can't leave that out there. Heck. I know where I'm sleeping tonight.
That's right, buddy. That's your payment.
Mm-hmm.
I like Ain't Dead Yet, too.
That's coming, too?
Oh, yeah, Ain't Dead Yet.
They're all coming. It was funny last night, you know, every gig is different. And for some reason, I was in a band... when I was a kid, and it was called Backdoor and Rodney. And it was like from 71 to 75, then I was in this band called Silver. For some reason, I guess maybe because it's in the middle of the America, we played St. Louis a lot. And it seems like all the people that saw us play there, a lot of them still live there. So when I played St. Louis, I ended up doing more of the old songs. And even though they like the new ones, but I mean, you know how it is when you have songs when you're young. Oh, yeah? Pardon me?
In the late 70s.
Yes. Yes, real long hair.
Lots of hair.
Lots of hair. It was the big hair day. So, you know, so I was doing a lot of those songs. I said I hadn't played any of those in a really long time. Although I enjoy doing it, but it's an acquired taste because it was a different time. And I just re-released. Actually, you can't see it, but I actually looked like this once. My grandchild's almost that old now.
Oh my God!
Not really. I was 22. We made our second album. So I put together a two CD set of all the Backdoor and Rodney albums.
It's really good, too.
Thanks. Yeah. That was a lot. I basically had wild hair. It was like waffle hair.
That
was different, yes. We didn't spend any money on haircuts, just a lot on shampoo. And, didn't have a whole lot of clothes to wear. And actually, what's funny is, you know, the trend is that Beverly Hills, you buy jeans that are all cut up, you know. And I used to have jeans like that were just ripped because they got old. And occasionally my wife likes to take me shopping just to buy, because, you know, now that YouTube, you can't wear the same shirts all the time because people say, oh, I saw that on YouTube, you know. I don't care. My wife thinks it's kind of tacky. So we go shopping occasionally, and what I found that it's really hard to buy somewhat hip clothes for old people. There's not a big market for it, you know.
Amen.
You know, it's very odd. You know, they just think automatically you just want to look old, you know. And since now dead is the new 80, I think that we're entitled to wear, you know, wear something that looks kind of hip. So we went to a lot of stores and we didn't find a lot of that stuff. And then we ended up in Nordstrom's, which they have some very nice clothes. A little more money than we've ever spent. But the ironic thing was on that last song we wrote about, you know, buying jeans for $200 if you saw they were in a magazine that were cut up. And as we were checking out, there was a sale rack my wife was looking at. She said, you have to come look at this. So I went over there, and there was, you know, this pair of jeans, women's jeans, and they were perfectly faded out and, you know, some dark blue spots, but they were just perfectly chiseled out all the way down, and they were on sale for $575.
Wow.
So can you imagine what they would have cost if they weren't ripped like that? They're kind of unbelievable. This is a song that I wrote with my buddy Michael McLean. It's actually right around when they had the LA riots, which is really a weird thing. I never understand why people riot over a guy who's just a bad guy to begin with. It's because he got, it just seemed dumb. So the city was falling apart, and that's all we saw, was all the stupid stuff going on. And you know, I've been in two major earthquakes there, and I know that, I mean, the national news sees that, and they just think that's how LA is, a bunch of idiots, you know, and I try to represent that we're not all idiots, and there's a lot of really great people there. We've, you know, when there's a big earthquake, you have neighbors who are coming around, knocking on your door, making sure you're okay, and but that kind of stuff doesn't ever really get press. It's just the idiots seem to get a lot of press, so we wrote this song. It's about people who are there to help. And the cool thing about this tune, which we wrote actually in, originally I think in 92 or 3, whenever the riots were, they ended up playing it at the, when Salt Lake had the Olympics, they played this, they had a children's choir singing this song as the athletes paraded through the town. It was really pretty cool. And so I recorded on my first little solo EP. Haven't played it in a while. But since here no one's ever heard of Bad Dolphin Riding, I figured I might as well play new songs. So this is called See Us Shine. Thank you. writing songs is really an odd thing. You know, songwriters don't understand why everybody doesn't write songs. It just comes so natural. It's a very weird thing. And I think that must be born with some receptor gene or something. I don't know what it could be. And enable songwriters to hear songs before anybody else does. And then our job is, and our privilege as a songwriter is to write those songs and share them with everybody else. And not that all of them are like that, because sometimes you craft songs. Sometimes just songs will come to you from nowhere, and before you know it, it's written, you go, wow, what the heck just happened? It's really cool. It's such a great experience. And the fact that there's only so many notes, so many words in the dictionary, you wonder after all these years, there's so few lawsuits for people copying other songs. It seems remarkable that that can happen. But when I was a kid, we're talking real kid, pre-18, I went to California from Beaver Creek, Ohio when I was 15. And I went with a band called The Loved Ones. They were all older, they were 19 and 20, and I was always in older bands when I was young. And they were going out there to try to get a record deal. It was a six-piece band, and it was a manager and a mother who was kind of like the chaperone. So my mother gave me permission to go out for the summer, and then I was supposed to come back to Beaver Creek and do my sophomore year. Well, I'm still there. And I think the sophomore thing is not going to happen. But I knew when I got to California that that's where I was supposed to be. And I always lived with band members and, you know, friends, and didn't have a lot of money back then, but there was an enormous wealth of incredible music and songwriters. So I kind of learned about growing up and being the person I wanted to be, listening to these great writers and just aspiring to be the kind of person they talk about in their songs. So as much as music shaped my life, and I'm not so sure it's like that as much anymore as it was then, because music was much more important back then, because it was less distraction and it was a big deal. When a record would come out, it was a very special moment. Now this music just gets instantly released, and which is okay. It's, you know, I don't want to be grumpy old man talking, but it is different. It's just different now. Because back then, music was not making the kind of money that it eventually ended up making, so it was more about art. And so about 11 years ago, I have twin sons, and one of my sons got into drugs and eventually accelerated into methamphetamine, which is the real devil's drug. It's the worst. It's just so horrible. And, you know, nothing really worked. And it's not like my wife and I were Ozzy and Harriet. We were in California during the Summer of Love. There was, you know, it was pot everywhere. You know, everybody was smoking pot, even the governor. But he didn't inhale. maybe he didn't exhale. Maybe that was the problem. You know, but we couldn't reach him. So, we eventually had to kick him out, which is a very painful thing to do as a parent. Because we you know, it was not acceptable, the kind of behavior that was going on. So my wife and I were so discouraged, and I had like one card left in the deck that I was going to try. And so I went to my friend Michael McLean and said, listen, man, I would like to try something and try to write a song that maybe could speak about what I think my son's going through. And just maybe it would do something positive, because nothing else was working. So we worked on this song, and so I picked him up, took him for a ride, and said, hey, I just got this new song. And I played him the song, and we were in the car, and there was the first time there was a moment where there was a communication thing that opened up, and it's hard to really explain what it was, but it was something. And it was really the first step towards his eventual sobriety, which has taken a long time and a lot of different reasons, not just you know, listening to songs, but that was one of the steps that helped him. So my songwriting partner and myself thought that, well, he can't be the only guy on the planet that this would affect. So we thought, what if we made an album, and maybe if we reached one more person or whatever. So we wrote these songs, and neither one of us are addicts, but we're recovering perfectionists, so we ended up with 17 songs and a 12-step record, which just couldn't decide. But they're all good, and they're not preachy songs, they're just life songs. And so before we made the record, we wanted to try it out in front of a real audience that maybe would get it. So we went to a recovery center, and there were 700 people there, mostly addicts or family of addicts. So we played these songs for them. They had no idea who we were, probably didn't even care. But by the end of the night, we really struck a chord. And so people came to us after the thing and waited, like, you know, 45 minutes to talk to us and told us how important they thought this record would be if we made it. So we tried to get funding. We couldn't get it, so we funded it ourselves. And it's an album called Soundtracks to Recovery. And it's just about songs, the empowerment of songs, and how it can affect. You know, the best description for me is, you know, have you ever driven alongside the road or been in your house and you hear a song and all of a sudden it stops you in your tracks? You think, what is that? Why did it affect me and everybody else is just talking and walking? I don't know what that is. But that's the magic of music and the power of music. So we made the record, and now we have a new website called it's the number 2recovery.org, and I'm going to do some of the songs for that record. This here was the very first song that I was talking to you about. It's called I Don't Always Win. I'd be a liar if I said that I'm all right. There's no denying that I'm better than I've been. But every hour I'm alone, it's still a fight that I don't always win. No need to tell me what will happen if I lose. I know the hell that will await me once again. But it's a battle that's the reason for these blues that I don't always win. No, I don't always win. Such a sweet companion when I feel abandoned keeps poisoning this canyon called my life. So where will you be when I go another round? Have you decided yet whose corner you'll be in? If it's a champion you think you might have found, well, I don't always win. Still that sweet companion when I feel abandoned keeps poisoning this canyon called my life. Yeah. Do 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 do. Said that I'm all right. There's no denying
that I'm better than I've been. But every hour that I'm alone, it's still a fight that I don't always win. No, I don't always win.
So as you wrote these songs over the years, I recorded some of them because I liked them so much and put them on other albums. I was actually on an album in 2006, pretty much right after I wrote it. And then the writing kind of escalated once we played for the people and got such a positive response and really wanted to go all in. And it's funny, we tried to get Kickstarter, which is a kind of a funding kind of a thing on the internet, and we got accepted by Kickstarter. So we made the video and everything, where you got to do this video pitch, and so we got everything done. We sent it in to them, and they said that they had changed their policy and that they no longer wanted to be involved in any kind of causes. And we said, well, you know, this is really just music is all this is. I said, no, we're not going to do it. So I was kind of a slap in the face, but even bigger slap in the face was I was reading the paper the next week about a guy who had a Kickstarter campaign, and he had recorded Charles Manson in prison, and he was going to make an album out of it, and they wanted to, you know, they let him do that. I'm thinking, wow. Anyway, so, you know, we did it ourselves. So anyway, Michael and I went up to September, it's National Recovery Month, and we got invited to go to Seattle, got some sponsorship, and played for a bunch of really great places up there. And one of the places we played was in a women's recovery center. And this was the song that seemed to really hit home with them. It's a song about a mom who's coming home from recovery, and how the family is preparing for her return. It's called Mama's Coming Home.
She needs to rediscover just how much we all love her. Oh.
Last night, some people just, I guess, have no embarrassment. She was sitting right in the front row with her husband, who apparently has seen the act before. She goes, "If I wanted you to play a song over that you already played, would you do it?" I go, "Well, I'm not sure I kind of get what you're trying to go to. Well, if I really liked the song you played, would you play it over again if I wanted to hear it?" I think she might have had a couple of beers. She was a little tanked up, I think. So she goes, "Well, this happened at another concert, and I offered him money to play another song." I said, "Well, how much were you offering?" So she just kept going on and on. And I said, "Well, you know, you can buy a CD and can play it over and over again, you know. This, but you know, live music, I would feel like I'm cheating the people if I just played the song over and over again. You know, this is not like a live tape loop or something." So she finally shut up and it was okay. But, I mean, I've been asked a lot of things, but I've never been asked that. When we were getting ready to make this record, Soundtracks to Recovery, we didn't really have a starting song. You know, it's really weird. An album has like kind of this first song that's the song that kind of draws people into it. And in the old days, when you had to flip it over, you had to have a song, what starts side two? And what starts side one? What ends side one? Now that's kind of, which is great. So we didn't really have a starter. And I thought, well, if this is a song about the power of music, then maybe I should write how the power of music has affected me in my life. Because if the people don't think that you're believing what you're singing about, then I don't think you're going to convince them that it's the real thing. So I sit down in my studio and I was playing this little lick, which a lot of my songs are, which is a little guitar lick. And I started thinking about my life and this incredible journey I've been on since I was 15, and being able to actually do music for a living in some form or another, and it's been really a charmed life, I must say. Having a wonderful family. And so I thought, well, maybe that's how the album should open, a song about what it means to me. So the basis of the song is that, you know, as long as we're alive, we can fix stuff. It's never too late until you're dead. Then it, you know, it's kind of hard to come back. That's why I try to write as many songs as I can, because I don't want to take any with me, you know. It could be my best tune. So anyway, this is called Ain't Dead Yet.
I play guitar. I like that best. I'm not a star. Oh, but I've been blessed. I sing real high, that pays the rent. Some days I wonder why am I this guy? What is all this meant? I share these tunes straight from the heart, and pretty soon I'm heard them first. So when your soul needs fixing, and your life's a contradiction, and you're burning down like a cigarette, I got songs for addiction, or any old affliction, so just to help you with your regret. What to remember, what to forget, 'cause you ain't dead yet. Something more. It's not the steer, the ship to shore, or it's you, those who'd rather leave. 'Cause I'm part of this crew, I'm in this boat with you, 'cause I've always believed that when your soul needs fixing, and your life's a contradiction, and you're burning down like a cigarette, I got songs for addiction, or any old affliction, so just to help you with your regret. What to remember, what to forget, 'cause you ain't dead yet. And maybe you're wondering if this could really help. Remember, I'm singing. I'm burning down like a cigarette. I've got songs for addiction or any old affliction, so just to help me with my regret. What to remember, what to forget, so you get that feeling when you hear me singing. We're not strangers but friends that haven't met. Well, it's the same back at you. I hope I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna long throughout my set. To what you get, 'cause you ain't dead yet. No, you ain't dead yet. No, you ain't dead yet. No, you ain't dead yet.
Thank you. Revolution's coming. All right, have a beer or something. Yeah.